Our next speaker is David Brender. David Brender is the National Program Manager for the Copper Development Association in New York City. His duties involve directing and managing the electrical programs at CDA, including their power quality initiatives, research initiatives, National Electrical Code, and IEEE work, among others. Dave has authored several case studies, white papers, and magazine articles on power quality subjects related to communications facilities. He has produced a video, DVD, and CD publications as well. He is a principal member of Panel 5 of the National Electrical Code and directs the copper industry participation on 4 additional panels. Dave is a licensed professional engineer in New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. He holds certification as a power quality professional from the Association of Energy Engineers. And he's here today to talk about one of my favorite subjects, lightning protection and grounding. Please welcome David Brender.
Thank you. Hope this is on. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for inviting me to this auspicious event. I am normally not very good at jokes, and of course the stipulation for most speakers is you have to tell a few jokes to get the audience warmed up. But I do have an interesting email from this morning. I have a colleague who specializes in entomology. Now, entomology is the study of the origin of words or expressions. And I thought you'd find some of these rather interesting, and I just got these this morning. From the 1500s, most people got married in June because they took their yearly bath in May. And they still smelled pretty good by June. However, since they were starting to smell, the brides carry a bouquet of flowers to hide the body odor. Hence the custom today of carrying a bouquet when you're getting married. Baths consisted of a big tub filled with hot water. The man of the house had the privilege of a nice clean water bath. Then the other sons and the men, followed by the women, and finally the children. Last of all came the babies. So then the water was dirty by that point, and so the saying came about, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater, and other things like that. So anyway, I have a whole bunch of these. I'll be happy to send them to you if you care for. Okay, the subject of my talk is infrastructure, basically. We're going to talk about power quality systems in communication systems, and I'm going to concentrate on grounding and bonding. I want to talk about both emergency communication systems and broadcast facilities because they're really kind of similar. These are the subject matters for the remainder of the talk, but pretty much whether you're talking about a 911 or emergency broadcast system, or you're talking about commercial broadcast system, the physics is the physics. It really doesn't change. Okay, grounding is largely a result of lightning protection, and it's fundamental to the operation of any component in the facility. And if you don't get the grounding and bonding right, everything else you do is worthless. And as equipment becomes more and more sensitive, as you're going to digital broadcasting, that type of thing, the need for grounding becomes even more prevalent. First subject is going to be Orange County 911 Center. The Orange County system is Orange County, Florida, by the way. This is the area surrounding Orlando. 11 transmitter sites. Previous to this, nobody was in charge of their radio equipment except one technician. But there's a lot to learn from the Orange County system, so I thought I'd bring this up today before we go into other facilities. Headquarters is in Apopka, Florida. And as you see here, there's a 280-foot tower at that site, 3 sets of five guy wires each. The guy wires came down to a concrete base. I'll get into the details of that in a moment. There was about $100,000 per year at Apopka alone in equipment damage due to lightning strikes. Now, I'll agree that Florida is very heavy in lightning, but we have another circumstance where it was merely static electricity that caused problems. So we're looking at about $100,000 a year or something in the order of $1 million system-wide. This is just in equipment damage. To you fellas, time off the air matters. Okay, $1 to $2 million losses. And as you can see, sometimes the damage is rather hard to find. This is the type of damage that lightning can cause. This is inside the facility. First step was a knowledgeable professional was called in to do the audit. The personnel on site were not equipped to do this on their own. They didn't feel they had the expertise to do it. There is nothing wrong with calling in an outsider when there's any doubt as to what you're doing. Not everybody is an expert at lightning and grounding. That's understood. So don't be hesitant to call in a professional where you need to. This is kind of interesting. In the Orange County system, three independent contractors installed the grounding. So what you had basically here was here's the tower. Basically, nothing ran between the tower and the radio room except the coax. Tower basically was ungrounded. The guy wires averaged in the range of 65 ohms resistance to earth at the grounding point. The electric service ground was totally disconnected or unconnected from the site. This is because an independent contractor installed the electrical service, an independent contractor installed the radio room, and an independent contractor installed the tower and its associated grounding. And all of them said, I'm not responsible, he is. This is pretty typical. Room full of equipment, pretty much, everybody see the little inverted Christmas tree up there? That means something. This is very typical of what was found throughout the system. Equipment basically was ungrounded. The cabinets were ungrounded. There's four copper strips, as you notice, that come down from the bulkhead. Only one of the copper strips was connected to an electrode. The remainder were buried in the sand just beneath the surface and left. This is not all that uncommon. I see a head shaking. This was the main bonding electrode at the Apopka site. And this is the headquarters again. It consisted of a 10-foot piece of all thread rod, measured 550 ohms to ground. Among the retrofits, and there are many, and the complete story is on our website, it's available for you to download or get in print, was a 60-foot deep electrode was installed at the tower to supplement it. Proper grounding of the coax that comes down the tower, because that is frequently a source of problems. The electrode, or I should say that all the bonding straps were tied together using 4-aught conductor, so at least there was a reasonable amount of grounding at the site. This is a picture of the radio room. There were 38 separate channels at Apopka, by the way. And you notice that on the grounds, you use a nice, wide, sweeping curve, nice, big turn. You don't want to make things nice and neat. Lightning doesn't tend to follow 90-degree angles very well. So wide, sweeping turns. Pretty much all the equipment in the racks was bonded with number 2 AWG. It led up to a 3-aught halo-type ring ground that went around the facility. When you're dealing with a concrete floor, you don't want to have to dig up the floor to install grounding around the perimeter of the radio room. So that's where a halo ground is like a ring ground, but it's up in the air, up near the corner of the ceiling. So that becomes a convenient place to form a ring ground, which you then can tie off to the remainder of the grounding system. Okay, all the equipment, as you can see here, was brought up in these little green wires up to grounding bus, and the bus was then connected to the halo ground. Proper coax shield grounds. Notice that these roll on the vertical runs, and I'm sure you all have these, but I've seen many a site where the grounding of the coax shield is on the horizontal run into the building. That is an improper place to ground. Lightning tends to go in a straight line. So if it's coming down the tower, it tends to go straight down to Earth from that point. It doesn't make that 90 degree bend into the building. So there are commercial facilities, commercial products to do this. This is the Reedy Creek site, which is out near Disney World in Orlando. Obviously, a lot of people are protected by a system like this. Now, on the Reedy Creek site, there was a lot more real estate to work with, because as you can see, this is pretty much out in the country. And so the system there consisted of the installation of a ring ground around the entire facility. As you see here, each corner was supplemented with a vertical electrode of about 120 feet deep each. Here's your, go back one. Here's the tower. The tower is grounded, so everything becomes one gigantic grounding system, and that's what you really want to accomplish. The most dangerous thing you could do is have an independent ground rod for each type of equipment, be it the tower, be it the radio room, be it the electric service, be it your telephone equipment. Everything needs to be bonded together into one gigantic system that rises and falls in potential along with everything else, so that there's no touch potential between two pieces of equipment. Each of the ground rods at this site, 5 ohms or less independently, each round measured independently has to be 5 ohms or less, not the entire system. Notice again the wide sweeping turns. This was prevalent throughout the Orange County system. You notice there's about 6 ground wires under that one lug. That was corrected, among others. Ungrounded equipment was all bonded. What I'd like you to notice here, and this is a good suggestion, is each ground was labeled so that you know which bus it went to. It wasn't a haphazard system at all. Everything was well organized. Secondly, a very good suggestion is lock washer and double nuts on all the ground connections so that vibration will not loosen them. Very, very secure connection. Okay, proper shielding goes to the electrode system on the tower. So here's another shot of the coax grounds coming down to a bus that was installed on the tower. Surge protective devices, or TVSS. This is the installation on the main incoming service into one of the 11 facilities. And it's a picture of Dave Hazen, who's the radio tech for Orange County. Inside, additional surge protection. Event counters, because they want to know about lightning strikes. Again, lightning is a problem. It's less of a problem, obviously, in Wisconsin than it is in Florida, but you do get it on occasion. Okay, thousands of events were recorded, and I spoke to Dave only a couple of months ago. Basically, no equipment damage or minor equipment damage ever since this was installed, with no downtime resulting. So 3 different contractors installed these systems. Separate contractors for each of the electrical room, radio room, and the tower. So no one had responsibility. Of course, in a circumstance like a 911 system, you have political control. But at the same token, you may be faced with a circumstance where the owner of your facility might have a bank that's in control, or a hedge fund that's in control, or some other characteristic that stipulates they're going to go for the lowest bid. Minimal design, obviously, and no maintenance. Under $100,000 to install the entire corrective systems on the 11 sites of the Orange County system. That's about a 6-month payback. This is very typical of every installation that we've encountered, that the paybacks are relatively quick. In case you think difficult terrain is a problem, this is the top of Mount Washington in New Hampshire. Now, Mount Washington is not a particularly high mountain. It's only around 3,500 feet. However, it's been known to get some of the worst weather in the world on the top. Winds have been recorded up to 232 miles per hour. The facility serves a number of radio and television stations in addition to FAA facilities, and about $120,000 per year in damage at the time we did this story. This is not including lost ad revenue from downtime. This is just in equipment alone. A major problem here is not so much lightning, it's static caused by the wind. When the wind blows through the tower, you're going to get a voltage gradient between the tower and the rest of the equipment, and that's where good bonding comes in. Okay, two deep electrodes were installed, an average of 600 feet. Now keep in mind, this is all granite. So the holes were bored. Obviously, you don't want to drive these things in with a sledgehammer. Backfilled with bentonite grout, and interconnected with 500 Casey Mill cable. On the top of a mountain, they were able to achieve 6-ohm resistance. The resulting system was something like this. Here's the TV towers down here. You notice a ring ground around each one. Basically, a connecting system of 500 Casey Mill, and at point A here, and at point A here is where the deep electrodes go. I spoke to Dick Cushman, who's the chief engineer there, and after 5 years that this retrofit was in service, and this is only a fraction of what actually took place, there was no interruption or no damage to equipment. This is KPTM-TV in Omaha, Nebraska. It's a UHF station. As a matter of fact, there are about five stations located within this building. Now, KPTM installed a couple of towers immediately outside the studios, and the reason is that their main transmitting site is about 10 miles out in the cornfields. So the purpose, again, is to relay the signals out to the main transmitter. And they started having lightning problems. Called in an outside professional again, because they, even though, and I give everyone here credit for being an engineer, I think being an engineer in a high stress system like a broadcast system is a really difficult thing to do. But not everybody is an expert on grounding and bonding. Okay, two 125 deep electrodes were installed around the facility. I want you to take a look at this inspection well for a moment. This is one of the electrodes right here. The reason for the inspection well is that you can then test from time to time what the resistance of that electrode is. If you notice it changing, something's wrong. Could be corrosion, could be that the earth is changing moisture content. You want to know exactly what the baseline is and then take readings on a periodic basis. These were the satellite dishes in the back of the studio. I'd like you to notice also it's a crowded site, so there wasn't room to install a ring ground around the entire facility. The satellite dishes were not bonded to the studio equipment. Everything was rebonded and connected to a MGB or master ground bus. This is a picture of it. So basically you tie together the satellite dishes, the studio equipment, and the towers. The case involved is on video. We've done a number of interviews with the chief engineer of the station, and I'll explain more about that in a moment. But this site is rather instructive about a rather inexpensive retrofit that resulted in not only equipment savings, but time gained on the air. And that is worth who knows how much. Lesson to be learned here. This is KROA in Donovan, Nebraska. What I'd like you to notice is that they have a relatively high water table, but high water table does not mean that the resistance to earth is necessarily low. The reason being that the water could be too clean. Water is a good insulator. It really is. Pure water. Dirty water is a relatively good conductor. So really what makes water conductive are the impurities in the water. And in the case of KROA, the water was too clean, resulting in higher resistance. Caused a number of instances where they were hit by lightning and went off the air. The old station engineer thought that the guy wires were too, in fact, the whole station was too well grounded. So he hacksawed through the inter-guy ties. They found the hacksaw laying on the ground. This is a real life case. This is underneath the studio. You notice that all the studio equipment is tied onto a plumbing tube, not a bona fide electrode conductor, and it's held in place, lapped on and basically held in place with automotive hose clamps. This is not approved methods for grounding. Here's a picture of the tower ground at KROA. What is the resistance of that joint? Does it vary with rain? Does it vary with what bird is passing overhead? I don't know. Again, automotive hose clamps. The conductor is lapped onto the little nipple that's sticking out there. Who knows? It could, you notice a little bit of rust on the end? What's underneath all that gray coating? I don't know. This is the Sumter County, Florida 911 system. This is an interesting story because Sumter County's sheriff's office, which you see here, was actually an old Walmart store. This is part of a strip mall, and when Walmart moved out to the suburbs, they donated the store and its surroundings to the county for something like a dollar. They transferred ownership. And they say, okay, here, it's all yours, but needless to say, they didn't upgrade it. So basically, you have a 1970s vintage low-tech department store that now became a relatively sophisticated electronic environment for the 911 system. Back of the building, they installed a 121-foot tower. Grounding was completely separate from the main building because, again, independent contractors, or they might say, I want my own clean ground. Nothing is bonded together. This was the original building ground. It consisted of one galvanized rod, measured about 230 ohms to earth. You notice the old connections, again, automotive type hose clamps for the old grounding. This is on one of the emergency generators outside the facility. So the old grounding was obviously replaced with modern and I should say more electrically conducive materials and connections. This is interesting. These two transformers which served the building were grounded to the building steel, but the building steel was not in turn grounded to the outdoor electrode. So basically you had a floating system. Complete renovation, the story again we have in a lot more detail in print form. Everything was tied together, and basically all the problems went away. This was a 911 system, by the way, where the operators actually received shocks occasionally when they touched some of the equipment. So by renovating the grounding and bonding system, it took care of a whole host of problems. This is a picture of it, and I want you to notice how the tower itself is bonded. It's not onto a leg of the tower. The contractor installed these little plates and then bonded the ground electrodes to the plates, not to the tower leg. You don't want to weaken the tower. It's structurally set up as a system, unless you're willing to take responsibility for it. You don't want to interfere with the tower leg. Radial ground was installed, and everything was brought back to this master ground bus, which is where everything now gets connected. You tie in the tower, you tie in your outdoor system, you tie in the indoor system, you tie in the building steel. Everything goes to this master ground bus. So there's one point at which everything is connected together so that the entire building and all its attachments rises and falls in potential equally. This case is KGBI. I realize, by the way, that break is set up, so I know I'm in between you and break. That's I'll keep that in mind. This is KGBI, also in Nebraska. Numerous lightning hits to this 1,200-foot tower. And this, again, is a site that's relatively in the country, so there's plenty of room to work with. The entire site was surrounded as a retrofit, again, with four-aught grounding system in form of a ring ground. You notice that the trench here was dug along the fence line. Even the perimeter of the roof was interconnected. It's going to receive a lightning protection system shortly. Also tied in was the ice bridge between the tower and the building. This is the roof in preparation for the installation of air terminals. You notice the conductor that's sitting here on the roof, and there's a connection right there to the ice bridge. That's going to in turn be connected to the steel perimeter, the lightning protection system, and through a series of down conductors, the entire facility will become a Faraday cage. This is bonding of the HVAC equipment on site. Again, it's using listed connectors. This is the old tower ground. Very nicely that they brought strap out. Strap is very low impedance, lower impedance generally than wire. You get a large surface area. So at least they brought strap out of the facility, but then it was held in place with automotive hose clamps again on one leg of the tower. So this is real life. Here's the new tower grounding. You notice there's nothing here to attach too much, so they used mechanical connectors. There was one electrode, one chemical-filled electrode that served the entire facility. According to my notes here, it was 250 ohms to ground. The retrofit here was to install a number of electrodes. These, again, are the existing. Here's the ring ground that was installed around the facility. And a number of deep earth-driven electrodes were added to the system. So again, the entire site rises and falls at the same time in potential. This is kind of an instructive one. I love showing these pictures because this is a very educational site. This is real life, and this exists in the real world. This is KKIT on the top of a mountain in Angel Fire, New Mexico. Notice the dissimilar metals. Looks like aluminum coming out from the transmitter site, going on to a galvanized steel tower, held in place, lap joint held in place with automotive hose clamps. This exists obviously more often than one thinks. This is their primary grounding electrode. You notice the nice use of plumber's tape. I guess if you tie it a strong enough knot, you know, you can get a good connection out of that. Here's their bonding to the water pipe. What's the resistance of that connection? Nice and rusty automotive hose clamps again. Okay. We're going to get on to things to look for and suggestions for you. Look for corrosion issues, as you see right here. Telltale signs of a problem. Is the resistance of the joint going to change with moisture? Is it going to change over time? So address corrosion problems. Use plenty of lubricant if you need to. Remake the connections. Good idea is to use bolt-in circuit breakers instead of the snap-in kind. My own house has snap-ins. I think most houses have them, right? Maybe a famous company that has a shape for a first name. And these things hum, or at least they used to get a hum on occasion, and you just give it a good whack and it'll stop humming. But if you're dealing with sensitive equipment, you don't want to do that so much. So we do suggest bolt-in circuit breakers where possible. Is this ground, is the tower actually grounded to the reinforcing steel and the concrete footer? We did a high school in Orange County, Florida. We were at a high school. The reason I bring this up is the Orange County High School involved had 4,000 odd students. The contractor brought the grounding electrode conductor out of the facility, out of the high school itself, went into the concrete footing, stuck the end of the wire into the wet concrete and let it harden. Nothing was tied together, nothing was connected to the steel in the footer. Got away with it for years until it burned out all the fire alarm panels. Okay, it's real life. Don't forget, a contractor gets a bid or wins a bid to do a given job for a given amount of money, and he now has incentive to cheat on that, otherwise he doesn't make as much profit. It's the way it goes. Do you have any facilities like this where the ground wires run exterior to the conduit instead of interior? It's supposed to be run together. This is a little bit out of focus. Neutral ground bonds, cross bonds. You notice here you have white wires and green wires on the same piece of bus. That's a neutral ground bond. That's generally not permitted. Look for it all over your facility. The lights will still work. Everything will still operate until you have a problem with the result of a transient condition. There is only one place that the neutral and ground should be tied together, and that's right here at the service entrance. Or in the case of a supplemental location on a grounding transformer, it can be done at the supplemental earth. But pretty much speaking, the neutral and ground only get tied together at one location. The ground resistance should be checked on a periodic basis. Under 5 ohms is desirable. There's many circumstances where under 2 ohms is stipulated. But it should be checked annually. You want to know, first you establish a baseline, and then you want to know, are there changes? Is the ground resistance holding relatively steady, or is it going up? Do you have a corrosion issue? We ran across a steel electrode where it was originally 10 feet long, and it started corroding in one spot where it rubbed up against the rock, and the galvanized material came off and started rusting. And before long, you had a 2-foot long electrode. This is a caution on UFR grounds. This is one of the tallest towers I've ever seen. This is KPTH. Located in South Sioux City, Iowa, and it's a 2,000-foot tower, and it's about the tallest thing I've ever seen. It's long enough to be a runway if that were laid out. Okay, this is the size of the footer for supporting the guy wires. We'll come back to it in a moment, but notice this ring shape around it. Okay, that's part of the retrofit. And to give you an idea of the size, Mark, the station engineer, stood on it. This was hit by lightning. It struck one of the guy wires, not the tower itself. Blew off chunks of concrete, basically the size of this podium. So be cautious with the UFR ground, that if you're relying on the connection only through the UFR ground, what can happen to it if it's hit by lightning? That's another view of the damage that was caused. You notice that the rebar is exposed right here. How strong is that? You know, there was a crack, which I don't have a picture of in this slide talk, but there was a crack that was across the concrete face, and nobody knows how deep it went. So the question remains, how strong is this support for the tower? And not only that, but if you found out it was damaged, how would you fix it? Look for any kind of circumstance like this where you have a direct lug onto a painted surface. The paint will act as an insulator. Notice the ground connection here. There were a couple of holes for the ventilation of the transformer. Might as well use them for a bolt, right? Important that all your equipment is bonded to a master ground bus similar to this in a radial fashion. You don't want to tie equipment to the equipment next to it. Everything is brought back to this bus. So you have radial grounding of your facility interior. On the outside, the desired result is something like this. Here's your transmitter building. Here's a ring ground around it. Separate and distinct, here's a tower and its own ring ground with a series of radials. Lightning tends to follow surface more than anything else. The guys have an independent ground rod out here. Relatively high resistance and one connection over here between the two ring grounds. So each ring ground is on its own with a very high resistance in between. The idea being that you want to get lightning to stay outside the facility whenever possible. You don't want it inside. If possible, you want to keep it on the outside. Worthy of note also is the importance here, because lightning is going to follow these radials, of checking these vertical electrodes from time to time, especially if you have a sandy environment like we discovered in Florida. These things become what's called glass popsicles. In other words, the lightning will melt the sand, and now all of a sudden you have an insulator surrounding the electrode. Okay, exceed the code. By that I mean the National Electric Code, but don't violate the code. Good suggestion to keep in mind is if you follow the code, that's one step ahead of illegal. It's a minimal standard. I sit on one of the panels, I know how it's written. It's written by a committee who each have their own point of view and their own interests in mind. It's a compromise document. And power quality and the maintenance of equipment is not part of the code. It's strictly a safety code. Number two, you only get what you inspect, not what you expect. Check everything. Have written procedures for maintenance, written procedures for contractors to follow who are installing new equipment. And then check that they actually performed in accordance with what they said. A friend of mine who is a contractor was recently involved with a sports stadium. And the sports stadium supposedly was surrounded with the ring ground. This was part of the grounding plan for the sports stadium. And the county that built it, or the city, and I don't remember which it is, luckily followed up, hired a contractor to do some checking, and he started measuring resistance of the grounds at various places and found them different. Well, if it's a ring ground, you should get one reading, and it should all be the same, which means that the contractor didn't install a ring ground around the entire facility. He installed little sections of it, and he never connected them all together. So obviously, the ring ground is not a ring ground. So you have to follow up. And number three, and most important, get the grounding and bonding right before you do anything else. Don't install surge protective devices. Don't install lightning protection systems. Don't install power conditioners before you get proper grounding. Recommended reading. And there are other books out there, I'm not questioning, but these are relatively common, relatively inexpensive, and all of them are accessible via Google, and you could Google where to get them. The IEEE, everybody, anybody here IEEE members? Did you see one hand in the back? Goodness, two, three, okay, there we go. I've been a member since I'm like 16 years old, back in college. The IEEE book is about $80 for the Emerald book, give or take, but IEEE earns its money from publishing. It's a very valuable book, not just for broadcasting, but for any circumstance where there's sensitive equipment. NFPA 780 is the lightning protection code. Again, it's sold, it's, I'm guessing, around $50 or $60 or $70. It's a paperback. FAA standards and Motorola R56 are available on the web. So they're basically free, especially the FAA standards, which are written for how you protect an airport. An airport being, you know, large area out in the open, and you have various buildings around it which contain sensitive equipment. How do you ground all that? These are books that and standards that you paid for through your taxes. It's available for no charge on the internet. So again, just Google it, and I'm sure you can come up with FAA standards. Okay, we have free materials on grounding and bonding. Where is our interest in all this? Because if you do a lot of grounding and bonding somewhere along the way, you're going to use a lot of copper. It's that simple. And my own particular love and specialty happens to be grounding and bonding. Excuse me a second. The one on the right, the Broadcast and Communication Facilities DVD. I have 100 copies of it in the back of the room. So please help yourself. It's no charge. It's right in that FedEx box sitting right on that table. So take one of them. If we run out, we're happy to send them to you. There's a whole bunch of case histories on our website. We don't make a product. We don't sell a service. We're not interested in brands. The whole goal is to get you to do things right, and somewhere along the way, you're going to be using copper to do it. Okay, thank you for your attention. I would like to make one other comment. We're happy to entertain any and all case histories where somebody else can learn. It could be a case you're doing something right, or it could be a case that you retrofitted something that was done wrong. But we'd like to hear about it so we can write it up. It might become the subject of a future, you know, talk or something like that. Also on our website, you'll find numerous case histories of people who've allowed us to come in and do this type of thing. So we're very interested in doing that. And of course, I'm available to any other organization like this. Happy to speak at any time. I've taught power quality for as long as 2 days and as short as this 1 hour talk. So the more time you give me, the better. Thank you very much.
Can we go? We have time for a few questions, okay. And I have one.
Sure.
Are you familiar with tower lightning dissipation apparatuses that I call them huge Brillo pads? They're on a rod, and they have all these fine needles sticking out.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of
lightning
those?
Lightning preventers?
Yeah. The theory is to dissipate static in the air.
I'm looking for a legal way to answer that.
Okay, I think
I know of no known, published, accepted standard anywhere, peer-reviewed, that has ever approved of any methodology like that. I'd be happy to see one. It's not in the IEEE literature. It's not in the NFPA literature. Caveat emptor.
Could you discuss briefly the correct methodology for measuring resistance to ground?
Yeah, the correct methodology is and I showed it in one of the slides, is a 3-point fall-off potential test. And if you get on the Megger site, M-E-G-G-E-R, they make test equipment. Megger has a relatively good paper right on that site, but the proper way to test is a 3-point fall of potential test. That is the definition of, it forms the definition of what is resistance to ground. It's the point at which you get a flattening of the curve of distance versus resistance. A good substitute, if it's used properly, are the clamp-on handheld meters. And it costs something in the order of $1,800, $2,000, something in that range. They work fairly well if you're testing, if you're using it properly. If you're using it in a electrode where you're testing that single electrode, it works fine. But if you're testing a system, you don't want to get the system resistance because it could be much lower. But the proper way is the 3-point full of potential test, and the Megger site happens to have a good paper on it.
I got a question. I was talking to one of We Energy's guys, and they've had problems with people stealing copper, obviously. And I think there's some detection circuitry that they had to put on the remote sites to detect a breakage in the resistance to ground and alerting alarm company because of the theft of copper. You know what products they might be using?
No, I don't, but there's many brands out there of people who are selling everything from battery-powered video equipment to, I guess, electronic testing that would notify you if there's a break. A rather simple solution for theft of underground copper was given to me recently, and it's so inexpensive, it's hard to believe. Contractors said, well, gee, all you really got to do is dump a bucket load of concrete every so often as you're installing the copper ground rod or the copper ring. Nobody will ever pull that out once it's compacted. I think that's a great system. Make sure you use non-corrosive concrete. Okay, that's important, but basically take a load of concrete every 50 feet, 100 feet, 200 feet, and he said nobody in the world will ever tie that onto your bumper of a truck and drive away. Can't be done. Yes, sir.
One of the things you said, like the school and stuff, does you do a construction, are you supposed to follow a building inspector around when he's doing?
Building inspector's not going to examine this. It really depends on the quality of the building inspector. I know I've heard of this is by the owner. There was a building in rural Georgia, 200,000 square foot office building that was put up by a given company. All the inspector wanted to see was that a faceplate was put on each switch and receptacle. He didn't want to inspect the wiring. He didn't have time. Building inspectors sometimes check for this, sometimes don't. It really depends on where you are. A much better idea is have your own clerk of the works or somebody who's acting in that role and goes around and does the checking.
Okay, what about someone that's grounding, gets rather exotic. What happens if you have an inspector who does check the grounds and doesn't understand what you're doing? I mean, I've heard of stories about that where people run into
issues. Yeah, that can happen also. You're going to need someone on site who understands what's happening and can explain it to them. But don't forget that the code itself, the inspector is there to enforce the National Electric Code. And the National Electric Code doesn't even require 25 ohms. If you read it carefully, it kind of alludes to 25 ohms to earth as a desired resistance. But it also says that you can't achieve the 25 ohms to earth, you sink a second ground rod. And then what? Then you walk away. You're done. The resulting resistance could be 1,000 ohms, 200 ohms, who knows what. It meets code, therefore an inspector cannot turn it down. It probably does not meet your requirements for sensitive electronic equipment.
So. And one more.
Yeah, I had a couple questions about copper strap.
You're only allowed one.
I'll make them quick. I tended to prefer using copper strap for the skin effect from the impulse of lightning strike. I noticed a lot of installations now are using number four, larger wire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious because I've been told in the past, and my experience has been that copper strap, even a 2-inch copper strap bonded properly, seems to work better than the smaller conductor. And along with that same question, bonded properly, the one installation where you showed it attached to the tower, what do you prefer if people use copper strap at the tower base, a CAD weld?
CAD welding is preferred method if it could be done. Strap has a lower impedance per foot than wire, because of the shape, because of the surface area. So you get a lower impedance actually with strap than anything else, but it's a little bit more expensive and not as common. So, and a good idea, by the way, if you could get it, is coated with zinc, just plated. It'll protect it from corrosion even more so than just the bare copper. So attachment, definitely exothermic welding or CAD welding if you can. All right, thank you again, and I'll be around for the next hour or so. Thank you.